Hello and welcome to GCSE English Revision Pod. Now, if you're listening to this in 2019, around the time we recorded it, you've probably finished both your literature papers by now. Very well done.
Woo! I can never read again. Hang on.
No, you must.
You must.
You must.
As we will explain.
We will get into that. First of all, we want to say well done. We want to say thank you so much for letting us know on Twitter and by email how you got on and how you use the podcast. It really is fantastic to hear how you guys have been doing with it, so please keep that up. But today,
and I mean, just not to boast, first of all, we did get some of the questions right, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
We guessed Sheila them. Came on AQA.
Hide is a dangerous outsider.
Very close, very similar.
Hide is inhumane.
Yeah, I mean, synonyms.
Close enough.
I mean, I'm beginning to feel like a god.
Yeah, I mean, you felt like that long before we ever started doing
the god
things,
complex.
Let's be honest. So today we are going to continue with our series on language paper one. But again, this is going to be kind of a different pod because when it comes to this question, we cannot and nobody can tell you a perfect way of doing this,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, the real truth, novelists build up their craft over years and years of practice, of reading, of developing their skills.
Research, watching people in cafes.
Yeah, I mean, that's very creepy, but yes, it is a creepy being a writer.
Yeah.
But what we're going to give you is some approaches you can do, whether you've got your exam next week or whether you've got it in a year's time.
Exactly.
If you're in year 10. Some things you can do to make yourself into a better writer.
So think of this podcast, it's much more about the handout, really. We've produced this handout for you, which gives you loads and loads of stuff to look at. And this podcast is really about how to use that handout.
Yeah, so you must download that handout. Why don't you go and click on the link in the bio now?
Yes, see you in a minute. Welcome
back.
What
a handout. If you're looking at that handout, you're not just thinking, oh, Mr. Forster and Mr. Galley.
Yeah, I imagine you've probably taken a moment just to sort of compose yourself after seeing
that. Yeah, I mean, I just had to wipe the drool off my tie. So, that's a horrible image, everyone. Let's start. So, Language Paper 1, Question 5. You're asked to write either a description or a story based on an image or a short kind of textual stimulus.
Yeah, absolutely. They always give you that choice. But the fact of the matter is, really, that they're just there to inspire you, aren't they? You're going to be awarded for the quality of your creative writing.
Yes.
Students are often quite worried about, oh, what do I do for the picture? What do I do for the other one? The reality is it doesn't really matter.
And they also say, ooh, what's the difference between a description and a story? The truth is, a good story has loads of description in.
Yeah.
And a good description probably has characters in to make
exactly.
it a bit more interesting.
And tells a story.
So, the way I come from this question, I know every teacher will teach differently, but I strongly believe you should imagine this question 5 as if it's chapter 1 to a much longer novel. Because short stories are so hard to construct, a short story with a twist and a clever ending in 45 minutes. No real writer ever writes, J.K. Rowling, the editor doesn't come and say, you've got 45 minutes to write the last installment of Harry Potter. Oh my God,
It
just doesn't happen. So what I encourage you to do is imagine a novel and just write chapter 1.
You almost set yourself up to fail by attempting a short story, don't you? Because a short story sort of needs certain things, whereas the opening chapter of a novel could be anything, really. It can stop at any point. It can open in any way that you like. It gives you a lot more freedom.
Yeah, and I think, and on that, all the skills you've learnt on Language Paper 1, looking at structure, looking at language, you've now got to show that you can do them.
Exactly, and this is why I know we've kind of disagreed on this in the past before, but I would always recommend not jumping first to question 5, because the reality is, if you've done questions 1, 2, 3 and 4 well, you will have probably nicked some ideas. You'll have probably thought of some stuff along the way and thought, oh, I could use something like that in my creative writing.
We're now going to confuse you because I still think you should start with question 5. But this is where, dear listener, you need to choose. So Mr. Galley thinks you better to work up to question 5. I prefer starting with question 5. What you should do is try both approaches and see what suits you and your exam.
I mean, that's a good way.
Because the reason I like starting with question 5 is just to get your timings right.
Yeah.
Because it's worth 40 marks. I mean, that's the thing. Maybe let's start with that, the obvious stuff. It's worth 50% of your language paper.
Yeah.
So lots of people revise loads for questions 1, 2, 3 and 4 and then forget about question 5, which is worth half your grade. If you only did this question and got full marks, you would get yourself a grade 5.
Yeah. That is certainly worth considering. And I do fully see that argument as well. It has to be said.
You make your mind up. You have free will. Yeah. So what we've got in this pack for you is 10 opening chapters, chosen arbitrarily by me in a free period while I was sweating upstairs in my classroom.
Again, horrible imagery.
Horrible imagery. But it's because we're doing descriptions.
Exactly, yeah, you're really bringing it to life.
And painting a reader a picture in your head. And so on the front of your sheet, you'll see I've also put a list to a really good reading list. It's on goodreads.com.
Yeah.
And I've put literary fiction. That's a great thing to type into the internet if you want to find more challenging books that will really push your vocabulary and make you think about writing in perhaps a more complex way.
Yeah.
So one thing, so before we dip into this and go into more detail, I would encourage you over the coming weeks, if you're year 10, try to do this regularly over the next year. If you're year 11, try to do it in between your other revision and balance it.
Yeah.
Go to your local library and read a chapter one in between your other revision. Do a bit of maths revision, read a chapter one. Do a bit of geography revision, read a chapter one.
It really is a case of that your brain will learn to do it without you even noticing that it's happening, right?
Yeah.
The more you are reading, the better writer you will become.
Yeah. And as you read, I want you to be like a little magpie hopping around. What do magpies do, Mr. Galley?
They take shiny things.
Yeah, they take shiny things. Mm. They make it their own. So if you see a writer use a really interesting word, you take it.
Yeah.
That becomes your word.
I fear this is your argument in a future plagiarism. I was just magpieing you on it. But yeah.
Yeah. Interesting descriptions of characters or setting, any structural tricks.
Mm-hmm.
It does not mean copying out the opening to Great Expectations and claiming, you know, crossing out Charles Dickens and writing, you know, Mr. Forster. What it does mean is thinking, you know, challenge your vocabulary, see how do real writers do it, and see if you can imitate it.
Absolutely. And then, getting beyond that, then we want to think about our top tips, don't we? So these are some things. If you look at the first page of the handout, we've given you some kind of general things to be thinking about. And actually, what we'd advise you to do today and onwards with this piece of with this particular area of revision is apply the tips on the first two pages of the handout to the 10 opening chapters that we've given you in the rest of the handout, right?
Yeah, and also in the kitten pack, the language paper 2 pack, which is attached to the puppy pack, not the kitten pack, the puppy pack attached to this, the paper 1 pack, you'll find some more exercises for question 5 and some example questions that you can have a go at.
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing is to remember is that there's 2 mark schemes for language paper 1 question 5. Out of 24 is for content and organisation.
Yep.
And out of 16 is for the accuracy and sophistication of your word choices, your punctuation choices, and your sentences.
So to put it simply, 24 marks for what you say, 16 marks for how well you say it.
Yeah, but they are linked together.
Of course.
So let's start by thinking about the structure, how you can plan to pick up lots of those 24 marks.
Mm.
So I think the first thing to think about is just like in question 3 on language paper 1, think about structural features you can use. You don't have to tell a simple chronological story in time order. You could drop some hints about a backstory.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, the crucial thing here is be subtle. That's a really important word. Don't do what bad horror films do and have your character say, yesterday, when we were trying to get the Ark of the Covenant, we did, the, you know, try to make it a bit more subtle. I'm terrible.
I've not seen that horror film, but yeah, it sounds good.
it's a Friday period 5. I'm dying here. But hint at a backstory. So drop some detail about what your character was like before. You know, lots of descriptive detail.
And I think dropping the reader straight in is great because it naturally creates a sense of mystery. You know, as if your opening line is, as she ran through the trees that seemed to scratch at her, fearing what she came behind. I mean, that's equally terrible. But, you know, if you straight away your reader's got then questions to ask, haven't they? If you don't tell them too much, throw them straight in.
Yeah.
To a situation that's going to intrigue them.
Avoid doing what some of my students do, which is telling about your character waking up, having breakfast, all those kind of things. So
500 words on Weetabix is not needed.
Don't be afraid to try something original. So one of my colleagues told me a story about one of her students who was asked to write a story about a children's game a couple of years ago. Most of the class did really boring ones, but this one student imagined a game where they were playing Stuck in the Mud and a boy tapped this other boy and then the whole of time stopped as he did it.
Mm.
And suddenly it was it became a metaphor. Amazing. For childhood isolation and feeling cut off from your friends. But all it was a description of this boy who the whole playground was frozen around him, and he went around feeling isolated and alone, and he sat down and cried. And it's such a simple and original idea,
evocative
but
image.
So different from what everyone else would have done. So don't be afraid of trying something original and quite interesting.
Completely.
Try to avoid clichés like running through the forest, as Mr. Galley just said.
Yeah, exactly. I was pre-demonstrating that there.
Do plan your story before you start writing, but also remember, if it's an opening chapter, you don't have to have a giant plot twist. You can end on some kind of cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So, limit the time frame of the story. Often having it take place in a few minutes is better than over a few days.
Mm.
Limit the number of characters, keep it simple. And do think about some of your structural decisions. A few things not to do: avoid too much dialogue. It takes such a talented writer to write dialogue. Yeah. I would have a little bit, perhaps, but don't overcomplicate it, because generally, if you read real novels, dialogue is the thing, I think. It's probably one of the hardest things to
Definitely. Craft. Definitely. And do you fall into the trap of your sort of, "Hello," said Mr. Galley. "Hello," replied Mr. Forster. "How are you?" said Mr. Galley. You know,
I'm sweaty, said Mr. Forster.
it's very easy to fall into incredibly boring dialogue, I think, and just dialogue.
Much like our podcast.
Yeah, we're doing it now. We're modelling what
always
not to
modelling.
Do.
Modelling.
Yeah.
And not in the sense of being good looking.
No.
So, as one of our misguided email reviews said, they inferred we must be good looking from our voices, and they're wrong.
They couldn't be further from the mark on that one.
Oh, anyway, back to the point. Second part is the 16 marks. See, about writing top tips. My most important rule for good writing is variation.
Yeah.
Vary your word choices. Some complex, some simple. Vary your sentence lengths. Vary your punctuation. Vary everything. Because the truth is, writing is a bunch of tricks.
Yeah.
And if you do a trick once, it's a great trick. If you do a trick 18 times, it's a pretty boring trick.
Yes. The only exception to that, of course, being if you are doing an extended metaphor through your writing. So if you use lots... So say, for example, there's one character who, in very simple terms, you always talk about light when you talk about this character. If you do that...
Like, for example, Juliet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you do that in a number of
Shakespeare,
different ways...
Shakespeare, he knows all the tricks.
Absolute charlatan. If you use that in a different way each time, then that's fantastic. You know, then you're drawing an extended motif for that character. But if you keep using the exact same trick over and over again, it becomes much less valuable, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, other few little things to think about. Think about your prepositional phrases. Often beginner writers forget to tell you where things are. In front of, in the distance, beyond the, under the, next to the.
Yeah.
The simple little phrases that help make descriptions more specific. Think about your similes, your metaphors, your personification. Think about your different senses. Think about trying to think what your character would notice in a setting.
And again, the trick with senses, I feel like I'm being really negative here and focusing on what not to do, but I think it's important. Don't fall into the trap with senses of just listing what your character could see, hear, smell and touch. Yeah. That doesn't read well. Think about what's the interesting sense to draw on at that moment of time. Which of the five senses is actually adding something to your story at that point in time?
Yeah. Other things, so you show off your vocabulary, but don't be like that episode of Friends where Joey buys a dictionary and every, you know, because it sounds silly. So my advice would be, you want some complex words, but you want two or three.
Yeah.
It takes away from fiction if you have too many.
And actually, to use a word properly,
you need to understand it.
You need to know that word really well. And that doesn't mean just having looked it up in a dictionary. That means having read it in different formats and that kind of thing. So having pre-prepared complex vocabulary can work, but you need to know that vocabulary.
Yeah. This is where the magpieing comes in.
Yeah.
Having seen it in situ, you might have an idea of how to use it. We'll find some examples of this in a moment when we look at an example.
Yeah.
Vary your punctuation. Again, a semicolon's great, but I don't want to see 18 semicolons in your writing.
No,
that's not good writing.
No, no.
Vary how you begin your sentences.
Or in an email.
Vary your sentence lengths. I mean, we know people who can't use full stops properly in emails, but we'll go no further.
Yeah.
That's a bit of an in-joke for me and Mr. Galley and select elite listeners. and do you play with the rhythms of your sentences? And we'll show you what we mean by this in a moment.
Mm.
At the bottom of page 2 of your handout, I've also included something that examiners were given to help them looking at AO6, the accuracy. And that's the difference between level 2 and level 3. Have a little look at those differences and you'll see some really subtle things that you can check can make a huge improvement on your mark. So we're not going to talk you through them all now.
No.
But a few little things to look at and not fall into traps is my advice. So we're going to focus now on the extract from The Bell Jar on page 3 by Sylvia.
I quite enjoyed when I first saw this handout. I quite enjoyed your list of cliched stories.
Oh, let's start with what
go
not
through,
to do. In my defence, these were from a friend who marked Language Paper 1. He was ranting on Twitter as he marked them about how much he hated these stories. And he listed them. As people did it, probably highly unprofessionally, but hilariously.
But it's a good list because I have marked every single one of these things.
So these are cliches that are utter, well, generally, unless you're a genius writing some kind of subversive twist, which I imagine most people are not, these are generally ones to be avoided.
Yeah, so don't write, even though I used this example earlier, avoid being chased in a forest. Avoid coming home to find that someone has been kidnapped. Zombies are a bit of a no-go, quite hard to write.
Yeah, again, genius writers can do it, but are you a genius writer yet, is the question you have to ask yourself.
Yes. Car crashes, we see a lot of, and they tend not to work. Taking part in a World Cup final.
Scoring the winning goal often can be a problem.
Yeah, that can not work.
And disturbingly, lots of Year 11s seem to write about like abusive relationships and things. It's really worrying, actually.
I mean, that could potentially work, I suppose, couldn't it? But I suppose if you're just doing it gratuitously, if you're just trying to do it
The point with all these things is subtlety is key.
Yeah.
And we'll explain what subtlety means with an example in a moment. Oh, the last one, don't retell video games or films. I had a Year 10 mock about time travel, and I had a whole bunch of people talk about like a man made out of iron and a green large man trying to change time, and I'm pretty sure it was the plot of a popular film.
Yeah, sounds like they might have been inspired from somewhere in fairly popular culture.
So let's look at the Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. We talked about this actually last week, I believe, on an episode on question 4.
Yeah.
Sylvia Plath she's dead, unfortunately, but she was a genius writer. Mm. She only wrote one novel called The Bell Jar. She was mostly a poet. And what I want to use is that as an example of the kind of the best crafting of language you could imagine.
Well, how about I read it and you jump in when you'd like to magpie a bit? Yeah. Is that a good way of doing it?
We're not going to read the whole thing, but let's read we'll start with that.
I'll start by reading it, and when you want to magpie and show students how.
Yeah, we'll read the first paragraph, and there's a few things in there straight away.
Okay, right. It was a queer, sultry summer. The summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York.
I'm going to stop you right there. That first sentence is strange, it's unusual, it's straight away drawing me into the story. Yes. So she didn't say, there was once a girl who was feeling unhappy in New York.
No.
Because this is a story about a girl suffering from depression.
And straight away, the fact that she quantifies that summer as the summer when they killed people, it raises so many questions in the reader's mind, doesn't it? You know, why is that the thing she links to it? Who are the Rosenbergs? It's just a really engaging opening line.
Yeah, so if you can think of something slightly unusual or engaging, it's a great way to start.
Mm. The idea of being electrocuted makes me sick, and that's all there was to read about in the pages. Goggle-eyed headlines staring up at me on every street corner and at the fusty, peanut-smelling mouth of every subway. It had nothing to do with me, but I couldn't help wondering what it would be like being burned alive all along with your nerves. I thought it must be the worst thing in the world.
So we'll stop there for a second. So some brilliant metaphors to look at here. The subway that's described as the fusty peanut-smelling mouth of every subway. Brilliant personification and quite original. Because obviously if you've eaten a whole bunch of peanuts, your mouth doesn't smell very nice, does it? So it's a really great description of how the discomfort of being in a subway in New York.
Yeah, and sort of bringing the city to life around her, but in an almost threatening way.
As if she's being eaten alive by the subway.
Yeah, brilliant.
And look also at the sentence lengths here. We've got that lovely short sentence, I'm stupid about executions, followed by this much longer complex sentence that has some commas, it has a dash before goggle-eyed headlines.
Mm-hmm.
She's really varied her punctuation, the rhythms of the sentences to make it interesting.
And then, of course, you get the single line paragraph, I thought it must be the worst thing in the world. So straight away, obviously you're not going to write something this good. No one is expecting... Well, some of you might, but...
There will be some in the... I've got a Year 10 girl who writes a bit like this, to be honest.
No, and, but for the majority of you, we're just looking for a good standard. And if you're doing these kind of things, then great.
Yeah. I mean, again, don't overuse tricks. So I see a lot of students overuse one-word sentences or one-word paragraphs. They can work, but don't overdo them. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
I'm not a huge fan of one-word sentences, to be honest. I've seen very few writers use them well. One-sentence paragraphs, though, like here, can work if they're a crucial sentence.
Stop. There you go.
Oh,
there was one.
Night got me there.
Yeah.
Carry on.
New York was bad enough. By 9 in the morning, the fake country wet freshness that somehow seeped in overnight evaporated like the tail end of a sweet dream.
Really nice simile there. The idea of the wetness in New York being like the end of a dream. Very, very interesting, very original simile.
Yeah. Mirage grey at the bottom of their granite canyons. The hot streets wavered in the sun. The car tops sizzled and glittered, and the dry, cindery dust blew into my eyes and down my throat.
Lovely technique there is listing. Do not be afraid to list in descriptions. Pick up little details in the setting. So here she's describing the city of New York. She describes the buildings as granite canyons, a metaphor comparing them to like the natural canyons, like a valley. I love the idea, the verb sizzled, glittered.
Yeah.
Really, really powerful description.
Now, really, there's perhaps limited value in myself and Mr. Forster carrying on and doing this, because what will really be incredibly valuable is if you now, with everything we've told you today,
you've got 10 extracts,
we've given you 10 extracts,
and libraries have thousands, millions,
yeah, bravely risking all sorts of copyright infringements, we have given you for you to work your way through.
Out of copyright mess, though.
They'll probably be fine.
Sure,
no one's fine. Listening to this anyway. But if you work your way through and do exactly what we've done there, look at the bits you've liked, think about why you like them, and more importantly, think about how you would use them. And send them to us. You know, if you've got ideas, if you read through, for example, the next one from Yellow Birds, Mountains of Madness, My Name is Lucy Barton. When you've gone through them, if you've got a bit of an idea and you think, oh, I really like this bit, and I want to have a go at putting into something, send us little extracts, send us little bits that you've written, and we'll, you know, we'll happily have a look and say what we think.
And some writing exercises that are great, just to kind of finish on this, is one thing that I like to do sometimes is to give me a creative practice, is imagine the protagonist from The Bell Jar, once you've read this extract, and move her to a different place, change her gender.
Yeah.
Make her a man in London who is 11 years old rather than 18 years old. You know, change the setting, change little things.
And see what you can do.
And try and write in a similar style, but with different words in a different setting. And it can really give you an idea of ways to do things.
Also, one very, very practical thing. I know this from mainly looking at my own work, when I've sort of had failed attempts to write things. When I look back at what I've done, I can tell where I started, where I just was starting to write that day, and where I finished, because inevitably stuff you write when you first sit down is not as good as the stuff you're writing when you've been doing it for an hour or 2 hours. And your brain, like any other muscle in your body, needs time to warm up. So what I'd
muscle is it
wholeheartedly suggest,
not a biology podcast, are we? Definitely an English podcast.
What I would wholeheartedly suggest is that on the day that you have language paper 1 and 2, don't let the first time your pen hits the paper be in the exam. Get up a bit earlier and just write something for half an hour. Just write something. Could be a little story. Could be what happened to you yesterday. Could be a diary entry. Whatever. But get that.
And don't just write. Read. Read something.
Yeah.
And my last advice, don't read the same extract again and again and again. Do not read The Bell Jar 18 times.
No.
Read a different one each time, because what you want to be inspired by is lots of different writers. And then what you might actually find is where you fit into all these styles.
Exactly. Fantastic advice. Now, I just want to say something quickly, because we mentioned abusive relationships earlier as they were part of this list of stuff that wasn't revised and that was not recommended by the examiners. What we must say, of course, however, is if you find yourself in that situation, please let people know. I don't want to have just flippantly mentioned that.
Yeah.
There's charities you can contact, like the Samaritans. There's Childline, who can both be found online. There will be numerous people in your schools who you can get in touch
with.
If anything we said about that raised any kind of issues for you, please contact the relevant person and talk to them about it. All right, thank you for being with us today. Contact us at GRevisionPod. No, follow us on Twitter at GRevisionPod. Email us
at EnglishVisionPod@gmail.com.
And we will see you next time.